Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to talk about fish. Actually, we're going to talk about a fellow by the name of Darwin Fish. And Darwin Fish has it's come to my attention. He wrote a page that he doesn't like us very much. Of course, he doesn't like a lot of people. He's angry at everybody from Billy Graham to, I don't know, he has a whole list of people that he's against. John MacArthur, Greg Lowry, Charles Spurgeon, who's long dead. As a matter of fact, you can go to a webpage and he's got a list. Dave Hunt, Fred Price, Chuck Smith, Pat Robertson, Tony Evans, Greg Lowry. I guess I already mentioned him, Charles Stanley. But anyway, just on and on and on. Catholicism, Protestantism, Orthodox Church. So he's got all these things and the views of these different groups or people, and he speaks against a lot of them. And he has a website called atruechurch.info. And of course now our website is hisholychurch.org, and hisholychurch.org is a reference to, it's a phrase, you know, it's not a name, it's not a proper name. It's not established by men, it's established by Christ. It's edified by men who follow the ways of Christ. And that's what we strive to be, is His Holy Church. You can't belong to His Holy Church. You can belong to Christ, but you can only belong to Christ if you repent. And so he's read a few of our web pages, put a lot of time into it. I don't know that he's ever contacted us. I don't remember. I think I would remember that name. I'm very bad at names. But anyway, he wrote a big, long thing, cut and pasted. And one of the interesting things about his webpage has to do with us is that at the very top of his webpage, he says, all graphics and images are copyrighted of A True Church. And then he has a big picture of me, which he took either off our website or newswithviews.com. And that would make that not a true statement, because he can't copyright our picture. So, because those pictures are already copyrighted on our own pages. And you copyright something so that somebody else doesn't come along and copyright it, and then you can't even use it anymore. If you write a book and publish it, and somebody else comes along and copyrights your book, you can actually lose the right to print your own book because they copyrighted it. And so you want to write down in your book that it's copyrighted. In other words, you retain the right to copy this. And if anybody else wants to copy it, they have to ask your permission. We let people reprint our materials all the time, and we do it for free. But we have a few requirements that they reprint it in its entirety. Now, he has reprinted a great deal here, and he hasn't always said exactly where he's gotten it, but we're not going to sue him or anything. What we're going to do is we're going to tell the truth about what he's saying. And he says a lot of things that are just simply not true. And the way you get away with that is you don't tell all the truth. And this has been a pattern for people who really don't love the truth, that hate the truth, that hate righteousness. And that's what evil does. That's what Satan did in the garden, is that he said, surely you will not die. And he was true. They didn't die right then. They did die eventually, and they died in sin. They died to the tree of life. They no longer were free souls under God. They had departed and hid themselves from the truth of God, God's presence in their life. And anyway, so he begins with putting in a Proverbs quote from, I think, Proverbs 17:11, and it's a fairly well-known quote by some anyway. The evil man seeketh only rebellion. Therefore, a cruel messenger shall be sent against him. And I guess that's what, I wouldn't be surprised you'd find that on other places, that he likes to be the cruel messenger, and kind of in love with anger and resentment. You can even see on his webpage his pictures, and look into his face. They're there for you to see. And you tell me what you see when you look upon the man. But we're not here to really judge him. We're here to find the truth and to understand what is right about the gospel, what is true about the gospel, and what is not true about the gospel. And he evidently thinks that what we're saying is not true, and that somehow or other we're the rebellious men, that we only have rebellion in us. And if you go and look at the quote that he made from Proverbs 17:11, the evil man, which has to do with the wicked man, and it says, man seeketh rebellion. And that word is rebellion. It's actually the Hebrew word memresh yad. And what it kind of stands for is someone who is flowing against God, that he's doing contrary to what God wants. He says, let a bear robbed of her whelps meet a man rather than a fool in his folly. What do all these mean? The Proverbs is full of these little wise sayings. A reproof entereth more into a wise man than 100 stripes into a fool. So we could pick on him, and we could be like 100 stripes against him, but it's not going to do any good. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about the truth. We're going to give the reproof of the truth. And it will be like a rebuke, but we're not trying to pick on him, because we understand that there's a lot of false information about the gospel that's going around, and we need to awaken to that deception. And there's reference to the strong delusion. He even uses the quote. And the question is the strong delusion coming? Is it coming from us? Or is the strong delusion here already? And we're not flowing against God. We're flowing against the strong delusion, which you may already have, and you may already be worshiping. You're going to have to decide. And I can tell you this, you will only know by what God tells you in your heart and in your mind. So you have to set aside all your pride and preconceived notions and begin to understand, or try to understand, seek to understand what Christ was really saying, what the apostles were really teaching, what the prophets have said from the beginning. Anyway, he says, it is a difficult thing that the king requests, and there is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. And he puts that in there, I think, because he doesn't like my interpretation of the word God. And gods, gods many. We're not to make covenants with gods many. How do you make a covenant with a god who's not of flesh? Them that say they are gods but are not. Now, I say that these gods that he's talking about are men. And he says, oh, but they are not with flesh, because they are not. The fact that the word god is actually an office, it's a position. In the Roman language, in the Greek language, the gods were the judges, even in the Hebrew language, and we'll show you this. And see, he doesn't quote the places where we show that the same exact word that they translate into gods is also translated into judge. He doesn't show you that. And the reason they had to translate it into judge is because you were supposed to bring the matter before the gods. That's what it would read if you read it, and that would say, well, wait a minute, who are these gods you are bringing the matter to? It was the judges. The men who had the right to judge. Now, in early Israel, the people that had the right to judge was the individuals. And they were given that right by their community in voir dire, in the choice of a jury. And we still carry on that tradition to this day, and that's how the law used to work, and the juries used to decide fact and law. Usually in every jury I have seen over the last 50 years, before the jury sits in the jury box, the jurors will waive their right to decide fact and law and take an oath that says they will decide this case based on the laws of the state of whatever, Texas, California, Oregon, whatever court they're in. And in my conversations with the head court administrator of the state of Oregon, they inform me there is no such oath by statute. But yet, the courts all ask you to take that oath, and everybody stands up, almost everybody. When I was asked to be on the jury, I didn't stand up and take the oath. And I said, fine, because it has to be voluntary. But you don't know that. And they're not going to tell you. They can't tell you. According to one judge, wrote me a letter. It's on our website, one of our websites. He said, I cannot tell you the answer. So there you have it. He knew the answer, but he cannot tell you the answer. Why? Because it would be a violation of the administrative rules. You are all under administrative rules. And if you don't meet the administrator's requirements, these are the new royalty of society, then you will be ostracized, even punished. And how did we get to that point? It wasn't used to be that way in America, but it got to that point because men like Mr. Fish and yourselves often do not understand the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith and how they work. Now, it's very interesting that he quotes this quote from Daniel 2:11 about the king not having an answer, and tell it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. We imagine that that means not flesh and blood. And who are these gods, not flesh and blood? Well, they did have a spiritual idea of a if gods and gods many, and they were not visible and not in flesh, but they also had a physical representation of these gods in an office called God. And we'll look at the language to see what that is. And what it is it says, how do you know what the gods and the God is telling you? Well, you go to somebody who has access to the God and you ask him. And he tells you what the God without flesh is thinking. And that is how it worked. And those men had the office of God because they supposedly had this divine connection with God. Well, of course, the message of the Bible is that God will write his laws upon your heart and upon your mind. And we won't have to tell you what God is thinking. But how will we know you are really listening to God? Well, we have things like the Ten Commandments, the guideposts, which show that if you're violating the Ten Commandments, you're probably not listening to God. We have the sermons of Christ saying that this is how we do things. This is how we are doers of the word. Paul tells us, you know, if they're backbiters. And of course, this is a little bit what Mr. Fish did. I didn't know that he put this whole webpage up about me. He didn't tell me. Someone stumbled upon it and let me know. That's kind of backbiting. That would fit the description of backbiting, which is okay. I forgive him. But it shows me that he's not really one of Paul's listeners, because we're not supposed to have anything to do with backbiters. He didn't come to me and say, you know, you've got some things wrong here, and I'd like to inform you that I think that this is incorrect. He just put up this huge webpage, bad-mouthing what we're teaching. But he didn't come to us and try to help us. He opposed us. Anyway, so he also puts in there other quotes like Acts 14:11 and 1 Kings 18:25-29, which I went and looked up and have down here somewhere. But in the quote, Daniel 2:11, where he talks about these gods whose dwelling is not with flesh, how do you even ask them? How do they inform you? Well, you go to men who have the office of God, and he decides, he judges what God is telling you. At least that's the tradition back then at that time. That's not what God wants. He wants each of you to know. But anyway, if we look at that word, that happens to be the word Eleph Lamad Hey, which we call Elah, and it's translated God 79 times in the Bible. and God with a small g 16 times in the Bible. And it's defined as God or capital G God. So it could be either the capital G God or the small g God, just depending on how the translator wants to translate it. And he bases that on his eschatology and what he believes in, you know, his theology. And you go and read it and think you know what he's talking about. It's from the word that we see also as Elohe, which is Aleph, Lamad, Vav, He. Now, we're going to actually talk about, again, as we have many times, about the meaning of each of these letters. Why is the word that is translated God 52 times different than the word that is translated God 79 times, or 95 times if you count small g and big g? Small g and big g, God with Aleph, Lamad, Vav, He, where they put a Vav in there between the He and the Lamad, it's translated God 57 times. Sometimes small g, sometimes big g. And the same with the Aleph, Lamad, He without the Vav. Translated 95 times. Sometimes big g, sometimes small g. You can't tell the difference. The authors who were inspired by God put down a different word when they wrote the text. But when you read it in English, the authors don't make any distinction. You just have to guess which God they're talking about. How do you know? Because it can refer to God or small God. Okay, if we read in Acts 14:11, which of course is New Testament, we see, "And when the people saw that Paul had done, they lifted up their voices, saying in speech of Lyconia, the gods are come down to us in the likeness of men." So now, here's men they believe is dwelling in flesh, God dwelling in the flesh of men, in the likeness of men, because of what they're doing. They're trying to make them a god. You know, one of the last things that Buddha said before he died was, "Don't make me a god." You know, one of the things he said, "The sight of me is not your salvation." Christ said the other thing. So, but a lot of men made Buddha god, and they made statues. Sometimes they make the statues of him, the oldest statues, to show a slim, contemplative individual who actually was a social reformer. And later on, they started making the fat Buddha pictures, where Buddha was real fat and sitting there with a kind of a silly grin on his face. But they did this. They choose to do this. It wasn't these men who were choosing to do this, and Paul was not choosing to be a god, but this is what they were trying to do, is make him a god. And so that whatever Paul said would be as if God himself was saying it, because God was dwelling in the flesh of Paul. This is common. They thought this all the time. And they gave men the power of God because they thought these men knew what the God, who is Spirit, was telling them. And they gave them the office of God. Very common at that time. So they would be referred to as gods. And you could make covenants with them. You see? That's how it worked. Now, if you read in 1 Kings 18:25, which he makes reference to, and I put down here in my notes, "And Elijah said unto the prophets of Baal, choose you one bullock for yourselves, and dress it first, for ye are many, and call on the name of your gods, but put no fire under it." And he says, call upon the name of your gods. And this idea of name of God, see, when we use the word name, nome, we imagine it means something particular. It means like what you'll see on your ID card. And it'll be letters in a row. And you'll call upon those letters? No. You'll call upon that identity. And of course, that's what the word means, is that it has to do with the identity of your gods, the character of your gods, the persona of your gods. And in the Hebrew there, we'll see the word as Shem, that he says, call upon your Shem. And that's the same name as Shem, who was the son of Noah, who many say was also Melchizedek, who, when they say he had no father or mother, meant that his father or mother had died. They had passed away. He was now the head. He was the heir to the world. He was the righteous king of peace. He wasn't exercising authority one over the other, but he was recognized as king and all tithe to him according to his office, according to his name, Shem, the head. And he was blessed amongst them, the rightful heir to the throne of the earth, who chose not to exercise authority. See, all the other kings were exercising authority one over the other. Now, I'm sure that Mr. Fish will have an argument with that. So let's stick to the things that he's saying. And so we're looking at these first three quotes that he makes reference to in reference to his dissertation on what we're doing wrong. Now, I already given you two different words that are translated into God. One with a vav and one without a vav. Well, here's another one. 430 in the Strong's number, so you can look it up. Elef, lamad, hey. But then they add a yod and a mem after it. And again, it's from the word for God that is numbered 433, but we'll get to that in a minute. That word is translated God some 2,346 times. Translated small g God 244 times. And translated judge 5 times. And translated goddess twice. It's translated great twice. It's translated mighty twice. It's translated angel once. Exceeding once. Godly once. What is this? It appears 2,606 times and is translated as everything from God to small g God to judge to goddess to great to mighty to angel to exceeding to godly. What is it? What does it really mean? It's defined as rulers and judges. That is the first definition there. Rulers and judges. Divine ones. Well, they often referred to rulers as divine. Augustus Caesar was called a god. As a matter of fact, one of the offices that he had as a political leader was an appointer of gods. Who were these gods he was appointing? These were men of flesh, walked around, and he appointed them as what? Gods. Ruling judges. That's right, that's what the word means. And we translate it God. We also translate the other words. Elef Lamad Hey God and Elef Lamad Vav Hey God and Elef Lamad Hey Yad Mem God. The authors wrote different words down. We translate only one, and it doesn't stop there. There's another word for God, and that is 410, which is Elef Lamad. Just Elef Lamad by itself. They translate that God 213 times. They translated God, small g, 16 times. They translated power 4 times, mighty 5 times, goodly once, great once, idols once, might once, strong once. They translate that same word all these different ways. And you wonder why people don't understand what the Bible is talking about? Translators are traitors. Now, it's fine to translate it in a way. I'm not trying to retranslate the Bible. I want you to understand because I don't want translators to write it upon your hearts and your minds. I don't want preachers to write it upon your hearts and your minds. I don't want to write it upon your heart and your mind. I don't want Mr. Fish to be able to do it either. I want God to write it upon your hearts and your mind. And once you understand the Spirit of God, you can read the Bible, and there will be some translations that are just abominable, but you could read the King James and figure out most of what it says, even though they've played fast and loose with what the authors originally wrote down. You know, when they translate the Bible, if you say, well, you know, in the context, it sounds better if you put this word here instead of that word. Well, sounds better to what? To your theology? No, you can't do it that way. And this is what they've done. You should put the word God there and then put a little note that says which one you're translating. And then we will decide which God that they're talking about. And it's a little bit more work, takes a little bit more room, but we have the technology. We can do that. And so you have to understand That, yeah, the God and gods of the world are ultimately spiritual, but they have physical representation because you can't make a covenant with a spirit. You make a covenant with a man. You make an agreement with a man. You bring your servant before the judge, the God, to make a decision. And so anyway, I also point out that the word Elif Lamad He, given a different number, is the word for curse. It's translated curse 18 times, but curse in what sense? Well, it's also translated oath 14 times, and it's defined as oath or oath of covenant. So the very word Elif Lamad He, which we saw translated God in 426, Strong's number, is the same letters as the word for curse or oath. And see, this is how you make men gods over you. How you give men the power to be ruling judges over you is that you take an oath. And this, of course, is why Jesus said, stop the taking of oaths. Swear not, not at all. Yea for yea and no for no. Anything more than that cometh of evil. He's giving you advice here. Jesus wasn't a lawyer, but he gave you legal advice here. Because you will go under ruling judges, under gods of this world, if you take these oaths. James says, above all else, stop the taking of oaths. So we should consider all that. And while you're considering it, we'll take a break here.
My name is Mark and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, God bless America, and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking about gods and God's many and the words that we find in the Bible that evidently Mr. Fish has not done enough contemplating about, because he doesn't seem to understand it and he disagrees with our presentation of it. So he gives you a partial presentation on his website. It doesn't give you the whole truth about what we say and explain. And so it gives us a great opportunity to do several shows on Mr. Fish and his opinion of us so that we may counter his statements. So anyway, I talked about shortened forms where you see the Elif Lamad translated as God and gods and power and mighty and godly. And it gets kind of confusing if you don't see all this laid out in front of you. And we're not trying to confuse you. We're just trying to show you that there is a way in which they can bring a strong delusion because they played around with the words. That word, Elif Lamad, is actually a shortened form, according to scholars. I'm not going to say it is, because almost all the Hebrew words are three letters long. If you see more than three letters, somebody's added something. If you see less than three letters, somebody has shortened it from something else. Well, we know that Elif Lamad is the first two letters of a word that is commonly translated God. When you put the hey on it, which is an emphasis letter, now it becomes God. Well, what if it's a shortened form of the word Elif Yad Lamad? What is Elif Yad Lamad? It's actually translated ram or rams 156 times. Ram, as in male sheep for breeding. And it's also translated post, as is a post in the ground. It's also translated mighty, as in mighty men. It's also translated tree. It's also translated lintel, as in the lintel post of a doorway. It's even translated oak once. It means, generally speaking, ram, or ram as in food, a pillar for the post and jam of a doorway. Because a doorway has a lot to do with entering something and entering back into the presence of God, because we've been driven out of the presence of God by our sin. To enter back into that, to be drawn back near God, we are told to sacrifice. Even the word sacrifice comes from the word to draw near. Why? Because God gives up his life that ye may have life more abundant. In order for you to be made in the image of God, you must give up your life to have life more abundant. Now, if you do it through force of your own will, it's not going to do you any good. But if you do it because the nature of God is entering into you, we will see it as a sign that you truly are the faithful. Because you are doing like Christ. Christ came to serve. Are you coming together in your church to serve one another? Or are you going to church to feel good? To imagine that you got the answer and you can tell everybody else. And then they'll have the answer from you. You will become God of their conscience. And you go around criticizing everything they do and saying, oh, they don't have, you know, my theology, so they're wrong. You know, it's all vanity. The real teachers that God has sent to you will try to awaken something in you so that you can listen to God directly. And one of the things that will draw you near, because you're hard of hearing right now, you need to be drawn near God, is to sacrifice. And Christ was very clear about that. And if you don't want to sacrifice, then you probably don't want to have anything to do with Christ. You may use his name, but you're taking it in vain. And you curse yourself. So anyway, I guess the one word I did not actually cover here is the word for God, The one that we see, Elohe 433, which is the Aleph, Lamad, Vav, He. So anyway, he goes on to talk about rebellion against government. He says, Gregory Williams, referring to us at hisholychurch.net, which is actually an older site. Hisholychurch.org is a better site. We use hisholychurch.net, but usually we store audios there, which are linked to from other pages, because there's more bandwidth for downloading. But the best site is the .org site. Is in continued state of rebellion against God, he says. And he gives reference to Romans 13:2. This is well illustrated via his unbiblical teachings about gods, and in that his rejection of God ordained governmental authority. God's governmental authority. This is a common thing. Ordained governmental authority. What God ordained is that you be free souls under him. Cain ordained that you should be in bondage under him. Nimrod ordained that you should be in bondage under him. Pharaoh, the evil Pharaoh, ordained that you should be in bondage under his authority. Moses came to set you free. God sent Moses to take you out of bondage, to set you free in a free state where all your taxes were free will offerings. You are bound together by faith, hope, and charity because you loved your neighbor as yourself. And you were never to return to the bondage of Egypt. So there's all kinds of government. Now, the government of Israel in the ancient times was a government. But again, it was entirely supported by free will offerings, except for a little tiny coin that was less than half a dime, and that you gave once a year as a token, and just to let us know that you're still part of what we're doing. But in order to really become a part, you had to give on a regular basis in order to support the needy of your society, the daily ministration. You know, if you go back to that quote that we were talking about earlier, where he talks about in 1 Kings 18:25-29, where he's talking about, because there are many, you dress this beast first, this bullocks that you're going to sacrifice. Why? Because they were going to eat it. They were going to eat it. That's what the sacrifices were. They were meals. They were feasts. Even the sacrifices on the stone altars, and we'll go into that in another place, were actually a means by which to take care of the needy of your society. Even your sin offering of a dove. Once you understand that the exact same word in the Hebrew language that we see as dove or pigeon is the same exact word for a piece of your estate. Now, when you commit a sin against somebody and you can't pay them back, it says that you were to sacrifice a dove. What they're saying really is to sacrifice a piece of your estate. And if you understood the Hebrew language, you would read that sacrifice a dove and you know exactly what they meant, because you knew the double meaning in the words. And this is common. Why we see the word ram translated post in mighty men and very similar to the word God. It can actually be the word Elijah can be a gift from God or of God or to God. A God's gift from you or from wherever. It depends on the context of the language that you're, the words that you're saying. But anyway, he makes reference to Romans 13:2, and he has New King James he uses. I use the Old King James for consistency. But it says, whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinances of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. And of course, I don't resist the ordinances of God any more than Peter resisted the ordinance of God, when they said, these are the ones who do contrary to the decrees of Caesar. I mean, Peter was doing contrary to the decrees of Caesar because they said there is another king, one Jesus. Now, if you're going to disregard that, you might misunderstand what Paul is talking about. Why were Christians getting into so much trouble with governments all the time? Because they had another king, one Jesus, who said to do things a certain way, and they were doing it. But the fact is, Mr. Fish has no king but Caesar. That's his king. That's his ruler. He'll do anything he says. Now, I'm sure he'll argue with that. He says, I won't do it if they tell me to do something against God. Well, the fact is, they are telling you to do something against God every day. And you have to do it in most cases, because you've made covenants with them, because you've sworn oaths, even though Jesus said, swear not. And you raised your right hand, and you signed under penalty of perjury. And why did you do this? Because of great wantonness, because of a desire for benefits, because you feared them more than you feared God. And now you have gone back to the bondage of Egypt. What was the bondage of Egypt? All the gold and silver was in the hands of the government. The people might have some token gold and silver, but the reality is they couldn't use it as to buy their freedom, because they only had legal title to it. And they had to give a portion of their labor, one-fifth of their labor, to the government every year. And the government was to supply them with benefits. But then the government had been having wars at that particular time, if you know what Pharaoh we're actually talking about. And they were kind of short on funds. And so the supposed rebellion of the Israelites wanting to go and worship God in the wilderness, they were no longer going to get the benefits. No more straw. They had to go get the straw themselves. They had to glean in the field at night for their straw, their benefits. But they still had to pay their tally of bricks. This is where America is going. This is where all nations will go, as you see the economic crunches coming by and upon you, because you haven't been following the ways of Christ. You've been following the ways of Mr. Fish and his ideas and theologies, as well as a lot of other teachers. But I don't want to pick on the teacher. I want to find the truth. What does God really want you to do? So anyway, he quotes something from the Free Church Report, the governments of God and other gods. And I write, God has said, thou shalt have no other gods before me. The word gods and the word God are translated from a single word, Elohim, and I give a connection to that, although he doesn't have that right there, but there are some footnotes that he puts down at the bottom of his page. In the plural, the word Elohim is defined rulers and judges. I didn't define it. I'm not making that up. That's in your Strong's Concordance. That's in your... You can go to Thayer's. I had a preacher once say, well, we can't just say these things. We have to go by Thayer's. I says, okay, let's look at Thayer's. And there it was, the definition that Thayer's puts on it, which is, for instance, the word world. Jesus' kingdom was not a part of this world, as he said to Pontius Pilate. Which word did he use there? There are five different words in the Greek that are all translated into the single English word world sometimes. Not all the time. Sometimes they're translated other ways. That particular word is almost always translated world, but it means constitutional order or system of government. And what he was saying is, my kingdom's not of your constitutional order or system of government. He was saying it to Pontius Pilate. He was saying, my kingdom is a hand all along. He says, thou sayest that I am a king. For this cause I have come into the world, the constitutional order and system of government. But I'm not of that system of government. I'm separate, as my apostles are separate, as they must stay separate, and I pray they stay separate. He's telling you this, but this is not what your preachers are telling you. So when you listen to the Bible, you hear it in the context of your preachers, and this sows confusion amongst you, and so that men like Mr. Fish doesn't see it. He doesn't get it. They are ruling judges. I'm not making it up. That's the way it's defined. And that's the way it's used. Some of these words are even translated. Some of these words you see translated into God is also translated into ruling judges, as I've shown you already. Occasionally applied in deference to magistrates. I'm quoting here right out of the concordance. While in the New Testament, the word God is translated from the Greek word theos, which figuratively means, and I'm quoting again from... You know, he didn't have active. If you go to our website, you'll see active footnotes where you can click on the footnote and it'll take you right down to the quote right out of that concordance. But it's not in the eschatologies and teachings and theologies that you're getting from your ministers, because they are a part of the world of Caesar. And church ministers should not be. They should be separate. Doesn't have to do with the rebellion. They should do this according to law, and we show you how to do it in books like the Free Church Report. And then I say, God goes on to expound upon this command that thou shalt not bow down thyself to them nor serve them. So anyway, he goes and says, obviously with those kinds of definitions and applications, a rejection of human government is not only a good idea, but an actual command from God himself. In other words, Gregory turns submission to secular human government into idolatry in the same book he writes, Vows of Chastity. And I'll go on to them, but we're running out of time here, so I'm not going to go into all this right now. But you can read it. Our Vows of Chastity are not having anything to do with marrying a woman. All the apostles were married at one time or another. There was no prohibition against marriage of the ministers of Christ. Early church ministers were married for hundreds and hundreds of years. We see it throughout the history of the church. But around 900 AD, there was a church, just like Mr. Fish calls himself, a true church. They thought they were a true church. And they went around and killed ministers who had wives if they didn't put their wives away. They actually, you know, put swords and lances right through their chest because they would not put their wife away. This was the authoritarian church, and out of that church has been born many other small churches until now you have 40,000 denominations. Christ did not create 40,000 denominations and 100 different churches. He created one church, and it is up to everybody who seeks Christ to seek what that church is supposed to be doing. And I'm pretty sure it's not supposed to be killing men because they won't divorce their wives. I'm pretty sure of that. And I have no doubt that there's nothing wrong with a minister marrying. But chastity has to do with being loyal to Christ and to the church and to the brethren of Christ in righteousness. Not as a, one of the rules, and we'll get into this in subsequent shows, one of the rules of Christ is you are not to exercise authority one over the other. So to be faithful to the brethren, and that's what it says here, the vows of charity means that the brethren, as the bride of Christ, does not commit adultery with another ruling authority. In other words, it doesn't go and sign papers under penalty of perjury that this ruling authority will now have rule over Christ's church, because Christ's church is not a part of that world. It is separate. We believe in separation of church and state. You have to do it legally. Have to do it righteously, but the church should not be a part of the state. Now, I don't know if Mr. Fish has gone down and filed a 1023 with the United States government in order to get their blessing to establish them as a church and made the IRS and maybe even incorporated the Department of Commerce with the Department of Commerce and made them the ruling judges over his church, his a true church. I don't know if he's done that or not. I suspect he may have, but there's no law requiring him to do that. You will find certain inconveniences when you don't do that, but the IRS in their own publications, and we show you their publications. We don't make this stuff up. That's why we have all the footnotes, so you can check us out, that a church should not be doing that, because they're going under the authority of the state. And the state says you're not required to do that. A church is automatically considered exempt whether they file the 1023 or not. Even on the form, it says for years and years that a church does not have to file this form. They use the word automatically. In the statutes of the United States government, it says in 508c1 that a church is mandatorily excepted from having to file. They don't use the word mandatorily anywhere in the codes except in that one place. Churches can stay separate, and that's what we're showing you how to do in the Free Church Report, so that you can remain chaste under God. Because if you go under, in the Bible, we can show you lots of places in the Bible where they talk about this, giving and taking in marriage. Marriage was the contract, the ultimate contract. Marriage was the first incorporation to people, a man and a woman, gathered together as one person, two people becoming one person. That's a corporation under a pre-existing authority for a particular purpose. But that was the ultimate contract. This was the ultimate government institution, was the family, created by God. Cain created the first city-state, not God. So anyway, he has a number of quotes here, and we could go through them, but better we look at them, because he only puts them in partiality. He doesn't put them all. He takes bits and pieces and chunks out. And occasionally he puts in a reference to the fact that Free Church Report copyright 2010, but a lot of these quotes he does not add that, so you don't even know where he's taking it from. But it does have references there. But that's the key thing, is that if you take out bits and pieces and you don't look at the whole explanation, then you start missing the whole truth. But anyway, he goes on to say, God only indeed in his commands. I said ministers of Christ's appointed kingdom are bondservants under the authority of God only. And he agrees with that. God only indeed in his commands. Okay, then he reads from Romans 13:1. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. Now this is not King James, this is the New King James. For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Why were you not to make covenants with, it not only says with the gods of the people, but even with the people where you go, with the inhabitants. It says not to make covenants with the inhabitants or with their gods. Why? Because when you make covenants, you give men authority over you. And you have less authority. All authority. You are endowed by your Creator with certain inalienable rights. You have X number of rights. 100% rights you're endowed with by... You don't have any more rights than what God has given you. Unless you start exchanging amongst yourself. Well, I'll make the decisions, you know, on this. And you make the decisions on that. Now you've given him the power to make decisions on this area, and you will only make decisions in this area. And you do this by what? By contracts, by covenants, by constitutions. You see? So let every man be subject to the authorities that he has given men. If he's made a contract, keep the contract. Pacta servanda sunt. Agreements must be kept. But Jesus said, swear not. Make nothing but yes for yes and no for no. Don't make these contracts. The Bible tells you don't make these agreements with the inhabitants or with their gods, whereby you diminish your right to choose. Now, you're going to do it. You have done it. Peter tells you why you'll do it. Through covetousness, you will be made merchandise. The dog will return to his vomit. You will again be entangled in the elements of the world. What world? Constitutional orders and systems of government. How? Because you make covenants, contracts. You sign under penalty of perjury. You apply for benefits through great wantonness, coveting. Where do you get those benefits? And here's the crux of it. You get those benefits from men who exercise authority one over the other and call themselves benefactors. And Christ said, it was not to be that way with you. Where does Mr. Fish bring that up in his argument against us? He doesn't. And that's where we'll start next time on Keys to the Kingdom. Until then, may peace be upon your house, and even upon Mr. Fish's house. And may God be with him so that he will wake up and see the truth of the gospel. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.